every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Wow, it's been... Man, I don't even... It's embarrassing how long it's been since we've talked to our very favorite green car dude, John Volker, who is the editor-in-chief of Green Car Reports. Hey, John.
Hey, glad to be back.
I know. Well, you know, I'll admit it's primarily my fault because, selfishly, a lot of the coverage we were doing was because for two years I was test driving cars and really interested in them. Not that I'm not now. And we just haven't been covering them as much. So I'm a bad green diva.
Because you bought a car.
Because I did finally buy a car. And I'm very happy with it. And you helped. And John helped.
Thank you. Well, you're one of more than 500,000 people in the U.S. now who's driving a car that plugs in.
Wow.
And that rate is only going to grow.
Well, that is darn comforting, I will say. And I've got to believe that Green Car Reports and the work that you're doing with them and all of the reporting is helping to get people more comfortable with making the decision to transition. So, yay.
Well, thank you kindly. We try to present the context around the cars as well, leavened with a lot of practical advice about what it really takes. You know, in many cases, it's a lot less challenging or disruptive or different than people think to get a plug-in car. But, you know, we try to make it real world and aim it not at science fans or early adopters necessarily, but at regular people who are thinking about a new kind of car for a whole variety of reasons, among them is you.
And I think there is a learning curve. So you all are doing a great job with that. But one of the things that I noticed, and I had seen you and I are friends on Facebook, mm-hmm. and I saw you had posted a new piece that I think you wrote about Trump and the Paris Climate Agreement. And, you know, you're starting to cover other issues that are obviously related to energy technology that does have a bearing on green cars. So I said, oh, hey, I haven't talked much about cars, but boy, we got to dig into this issue. Right, John?
Yep. It turns out that our readers, once they think about electric cars, many of them start to think about where the electricity used to recharge them is coming from.
Right.
In California, there's a strong correlation between solar panels and electric car ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But we've covered more broadly both some of the energy politics, especially with the transition in administrations, and some of the issues around how the world of electric utilities, which tends to think in 50-year terms, is changing very rapidly due to new technology, and how all that plays into the energy ecosystem of which cars are a piece.
So you and I chatted a little bit before just to kind of outline what we were going to talk about. And one of the first things on our agenda was to talk about Pruitt being approved, whatever the word is, I can't even...
He's been nominated. He hasn't yet been confirmed.
Confirmed, thank you. I mean, because it's like I can't even, it's like marbles in my mouth. I can't spit that out. It's very upsetting. That's my humble opinion for the EPA, and so tell us what's going to happen if that does happen.
Well, Pruitt had his initial effectively interviews with the Senate. A confirmation hearing has not yet been scheduled for him, and as we saw last night with the hearing over Jefferson Beauregard Sessions to be the next attorney general, these hearings are as contentious as any in recent memory. Certainly the education secretary was only confirmed because the vice president stepped in as a tiebreaker. So
wow.
Nominations are taking a while, and Pruitt certainly has quite a lot of opposition. 447 EPA employees from both sides of the aisle, many of them career environmentalists, signed a letter saying he was patently unqualified. On the other hand, there have been similar letters, including the one that Senator Elizabeth Warren was not allowed to read last night on the floor of the Senate.
Right.
So it is unclear whether or not Pruitt will face any real opposition or whether he will be voted in on straight party lines.
Right.
If Scott Pruitt becomes the head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, I think it's fair to assume that things will change. Pruitt not only is on record as denying climate science. He somewhat walked that back. He said the planet's temperature is changing, but it's still debatable whether man has contributed to that. The scientific consensus is not that it is debatable. The scientific consensus is that, in fact, man has contributed to that warming in a very, very short period of time.
Right.
So we have essentially a climate science denier who, in his previous position as the Attorney General of Oklahoma, sued the EPA no less than 14 times for enforcing its rules, which seems an interesting set of qualifications to bring to run the agency. But because he sued it so often, Pruitt is thought to have an extremely detailed understanding of how the EPA actually works, how it passes rules, how rules are changed, what the legalities are. And the expectation is that many of the changes he is expected to enact, largely following the playbook of the fossil fuel industry, will be done surgically, quietly, with a scalpel, so that they won't necessarily be entirely visible to the public. As opposed to essentially taking a meat cleaver to everything, or, you know, forbidding employees from speaking or what have you. There's a lot of stuff that you can do within the rules, regulations, procedures, and so forth that govern the agency. Things may simply get slowed down or stopped or, quote, sent for review or what have you.
Right.
Now, this is all very theoretical. Pruitt hasn't yet been confirmed. But I think it's fair to say that EPA employees are deeply concerned at the notion of being run by someone who doesn't accept science and who clearly has followed the playbook of the fossil fuel industry in that regard.
Well,
so that's kind of Pruitt.
Not unfounded. And in that vein, there's also the Clean Power Plan. And what is going to happen to Obama's Clean Power Plan, which really, you know, kind of hopeful.
Right. The Clean Power Plan was really the major element of the Obama administration's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emission. It essentially said that every state was responsible for reducing carbon emissions, and states had wide latitude on how to do that. Each state would draw up a plan, but if the state refused to draw up a plan, the feds would draw it up for them. And there were a number of tools. Some of them were shutting down coal plants or converting them to natural gas. Energy efficiency was one way to do it. If you simply used less electricity, that too reduced carbon. So it was really a plan that was fairly cleverly designed. It is on hold at the moment in court from a lawsuit filed before the election. The issue is that a case could be made, certainly, that the Trump administration will not pursue defending the Clean Power Plan on behalf of the U.S. government or the EPA. And that's one of the concerns about Pruitt as well as Rick Perry as Energy Secretary. Again, none of these things have happened yet because neither man has been confirmed. But, you know, it has been said by sort of hard-nosed people who calculate these things that the various pipeline projects are essentially irrelevant in terms of greenhouse gas impact if the Clean Power Plan goes through.
Wow.
Which is to say...
Wait a minute. That's my head just exploded.
Yeah. The impact over several decades of the Clean Power Plan will totally swamp the increase in carbon emissions from the pipeline projects that were not approved under Obama and are being reapproved under Trump. I'm not going to replicate the math here, but the analyses I've read have said basically that's how important the Clean Power Plan is.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then the last point you and I discussed was the Paris Climate Treaty.
Right.
Which the U.S. Is committed to participate in, except that one of Trump's advisors, a man named Myron E. Bell, who is another climate science denier and was made his EPA transition consultant, one of the first appointments Trump made after the election.
Wow.
E. Bell indicated to an audience in London that the U.S. would be pulling out of, or at least declining to participate in, the Paris climate treaties.
Which all but kills it, I think.
No, I don't think that's true, actually.
Okay, good.
The important thing to understand about greenhouse gas emissions, and this applies as well to the fuel economy standards that the auto industry has asked the Trump administration to slow down or freeze, is that the U.S. is a major part of the global problem, but it is not the whole global problem.
No.
And it would appear that China actually does believe in science.
Yes.
And China's rulers, who are also facing really horrendous and toxic
pollution,
and health-impacting air pollution in most of their major cities, are going to make a serious effort. I don't know if you saw the news alert, but China canceled 103 coal power plants a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I did. And I thought, well, that is damned encouraging. And
some of them were already under construction.
Yeah,
not just plans, but under construction.
Yeah, they've really stepped up in a way that I'm not sure everybody expected that they would. And I think what I'm feeling about America pulling out of, or trying to pull out of, the Paris Agreement, which apparently is more complicated than even Trump understands, perhaps, but
correct,
is that, you know, we have been leaders. We have been influencers in the world of some of these things. And maybe that's not as true as it used to be. But there's a sensation that if America stops trying, then why should we? And I hope that's not
true.
I really hope it's not. But this is some of the...
I think China actually might be quite happy. Look,
Chinese
government industrial policy
to
be the largest producer of photovoltaic solar cells in the world, to be the largest producer of lithium ion cells in the world, largest producer of electric cars in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
All three of those things help with climate change. And I think there is a very convincing scenario under which China basically says, so sad about the U.S. and, you know, their silly beliefs. We're quite happy to lead the charge to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions.
I'm okay with that.
You know, we will work closely with India, with the European Union, and we'll just sort of cut the U.S. out of it. And the European Union is certainly not going to reduce its carbon reduction goals. Not going to cut its carbon reduction goals.
Right.
Just because Donald Trump doesn't believe in science.
No, that's true. You're right. Okay, I feel better.
It's not going to be pretty, but the U.S. either slow walking or pulling out of the Paris Agreement is not going to stop the rest of the world. It may slow things, but at this point, the costs are continuing to come down on renewable energy. California just this week launched three very large battery storage plants to handle renewable energy, make it less peaky, and deliver it when needed.
Right.
There is an enormous amount of momentum changing the way energy is produced, stored, and delivered. And it is likely unstoppable regardless of what Trump does. Trump is delusional if he thinks he will bring back coal.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, it just isn't even economical.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. So, and you know, every time he loosens a regulation on fracking, he makes natural gas probably somewhat cheaper, and deals another body blow to coal.
So. Well, I'm encouraged. I think when I initially had read some analysis of this, there was a lot of concern that if he were able to technically pull out, which, as I said, and I think you know more, it's not as easy. He can't just, like, cut the cord.
The U.S. has signed an international treaty with a large number of other nations. Now, there are supposed to be some legal ways where he could essentially cancel the he could cancel the authorization letter that got the U.S. to negotiate in the first place. You know, I think there's so much going on, and it's been such a messy transition, and it's so contentious right now that it remains unclear to me that boosting fossil fuels and dismantling EPA regulations are first and foremost on the list. Quite clearly, they are not going to be able to cancel the Affordable Care Act and replace it with something that will continue to ensure 22 million people. So they're coming up against reality. That said, I would not want to be an EPA employee, and I don't want to be put in the position of sort of downplaying the risks. But this administration is going to come face to face with reality, which is very different from campaigning.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a heck of a lot of resistance out there. I'm allowed to say, because I don't pretend to be a neutral news source, but I support resistance. I am resisting in whatever way personally that I can, in a positive, constructive, peaceful way. For me, there are things that I believe in that I think are at stake. And so I will get active. I feel like all that is going on, there's a lot of negativity, but I also feel that there's a call to action. There's a call for people to step up their game. If you care about certain things that you feel may be threatened, then step up and get educated, get active, and like I said, keep it positive and peaceful. But John certainly is and Green Car Reports is one way to begin to learn about one aspect of these of what's happening, because you guys are very good at staying on top of what's going on with energy and technology and, like you said, the politics of it, as it does relate to cars, and manufacturers must be kind of keeping an eye on what's going on, right?
And one of the things that has changed since the last time we talked, the 2017 Chevrolet Bolt EV. Now, that's Bolt with a B, like in boy, not Volt with a V, like in victory. But the Bolt EV, which is Chevy's 238-mile electric car, starting at $37,500 before any of the incentives, went on sale in December in California and Oregon.
Yeah, I remember you and I were both in Detroit when they announced that, and everybody's like, huh. Let's see what happens with that one.
That's well, and GM has done exactly what it said it would. It launched the car on time, got it out 23 months after it was first revealed. And there are long lines to buy the thing in parts of California.
Well, clearly you've driven it. I have not. And tell me what it's like.
Like any electric car, any all-electric car, it's smooth. It's quiet. Mm-hmm. It has great acceleration off the line because electric motors have their maximum output from zero. And the great thing, you know, before the Bolt EV, if you wanted 200 miles of range, you had to buy a Tesla, which started around $70,000.
Right.
The Bolt EV starts at $37,500, which if you're in California, between the federal tax credit and the California check in the mail, that goes down to $27,500, okay? So, you know, this is a mass-priced electric car with 238 miles of range. So it has all the benefits of all the other electric cars, but all the others have battery ranges between 62 and 107 miles. And for 2017, there's a couple coming out with 124 miles. The Bolt EV is almost twice that. The simple message is that you get in the Bolt EV, and you can drive for 4 or 5 hours and not even think about range.
Well,
that doesn't even cross your mind.
You know, where I live in New Jersey, there's not a lot of public charging stations yet. You know, so I mean, in California, you could go a lot further, maybe in New York, but if I could go 4 miles, clearly I could probably survive.
Well, and
I mean, four, you know, what do you say, 4 hours? Sorry.
Oh, okay. 4 hours. Yeah. Well, more than that, with that large battery, you don't need to recharge every night.
Yeah.
You know, you can plug it in every couple nights, or if you have charging at work, you don't need to use it every day. Maybe you just use it once a week,
mm-hmm.
or you take it to a quick charging station and recharge 80% of the battery in half an hour,
right.
every Saturday or something.
Yeah.
So it gives you a great deal more flexibility, but most importantly, it removes that range anxiety.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people who justifiably say, hey, look, if it's rated at 84 miles, you know, I know my daily commute, but I need a buffer in case I have to take my kid to the hospital at 3 a.m,
right.
which is 22 miles away.
Right.
And I understand that, especially in the winter, battery range goes down. The yeah. Bolt EV really sort of takes care of all of that in the same way that a Tesla does, but at half the price.
Mm.
So it's a very important introduction. It will roll out across the rest of the country over the next 6 to 9 months.
Right.
The last group of states, they'll be in dealerships in September, amusingly, including Michigan, where GM is headquartered.
Yeah.
No comment on that one.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, if you want to find out when your particular state will have Bolts available for you to order and then when they'll be delivered, Green Car Reports has a state-by-state guide
nice.
On when Bolt EVs will come to your state.
Well, maybe and I have really, to jump back in the game. Maybe I have to jump back in the game and drive one of these.
Oh, you should definitely drive a Bolt EV. It's,
okay.
It's got about the same amount of interior room as your Ford C-Max.
Yeah.
It, too, is front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
But it has no engine. It's all electric.
Yeah.
And that 238-mile range.
Wow. Oh, John, I could talk to you all day long. I do miss our regular conversations. We're going to have to not be so long between now and the next
so
time.
So call me. You oh, know yeah. where I live.
You know where I live. John, thank you so much. And everybody check out greencarreports.com. There you have it. Thanks, John.
Thank you. My pleasure. Take care.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.